for 25 years. Nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Boy, I'll tell you what, I'm excited to have you come into this league, and man, what a pair up we could do with old Dak Prescott, some of those guys that we've got out there of options to get you the ball, so we can dream of visions of sugar plums around here.
Sugar plums and Johnny Walker Blue. I don't know where Jerry Jones was when he said that. There's a good chance he was on his boat, because the boat's big enough to have a boardroom like that in it. He was probably at the Star, the practice facility in Texas.
I would think.
Hey, if I only got an hour. Now, I think part of what he was saying while he was talking to Kyle Pitts was for the benefit of the cameras, because that's the thing. It's never truly reality when the camera's on. I mean, if I only have an hour with the guy, I'm gonna make better use of it than waxing poetically about sugar plums and Dak Prescott. I want to get to know more about the guy, which is a relevant topic because we learned a little bit more yesterday about how some of these teams get to know about their guys, and that ultimately inspired today's draft. But Jerry Jones making no effort to hide the reported slash actual infatuation with Kyle Pitts, the best tight end prospect in the draft, and really one of the best tight end prospects in a very long time, Chris.
It really is. Listen, you know, I really just studied him within the last week. You know, I had always seen highlights enough of college football to know, like, hey, yeah, this guy's special. He's a top 20 pick, right, Mike? But, man, I mean, it's more impressive when you really study him. You know, first off, like, the pass game stuff, it's off the charts good, a little bit like what we talked about. I mean, I think we brought it up before, but he can move like a wide receiver. You know, for a big guy, the way he is, like, he's when he's covered, Mike, it just doesn't matter. It's unbelievable in those, you know, back shoulder 50-50 jump ball type things. It's as good as I remember any tight end looking. And then added on top of that, the guy blocks. I mean, he blocks. He's got some dog in him. He's not like just looking to, you know, catch passes and be pretty and do all of that. So that's where it's really special. And he is definitely worth a top 10 pick. And I'd be shocked, really, if he was on the board at number 10 for Dallas to pick him. I just think he's going to be off before then.
Yeah, the Cowboys hold that 10th pick, and we'll find out a week from tonight.
Yeah.
We have no countdown clock. We've joked about it from time to time. You really don't need one. You know it's a week away. You don't need to see it. And I also, I'm always nervous when I see a countdown clock. I don't know why, because I never quite know what's going to happen when the clock strikes zero, and I don't want to find out. Like, one of these times, when the clock strikes zero, something bad's going to happen. Well, so, and I also don't need to be reminded of the seconds and minutes of my life ticking away.
I hear you there. Yeah, you don't need that. Now, you did have a real jerky countdown clock at one time on PFT. I guess it wasn't a countdown clock, or right? What was the thing you used to have about players? Yeah, right.
days without an arrest.
There
was nothing jerky about it. It was an effort to make folks understand that.
I guess I'm a jerk for bringing it up. And we all, what I am.
Hey, no, look, you know what? Brandon Marshall, your former teammate, Brandon Marshall,
right,
came on the air with me in Houston, and we had a conversation.
I forgot.
And he convinced me the time had come to move on from it.
Right.
And you know, in the aftermath, for all the ways the Ray Rice situation was mishandled by the league, and for all the ways that this whole concept of paid leave has been mishandled by the league, and I still don't believe that paid leave is an appropriate effort because guys want to play football. You know, most people, hey, I'll take a paid vacation. You're going to pay me to not work? Sure, fine. As long as I'm getting paid, I don't care. These guys want to play football. A lot of people love their jobs, and they want to work their jobs. But regardless of the missteps, it got the message out to players.
It did.
That there will be significant consequences for your actions.
Right.
And if you do get in trouble, it makes other players look bad. I mean, that's the thing. The vast majority of guys who don't get in trouble were made to look bad by the handful that did. And now that handful that does is smaller and smaller all the time, Chris.
No, you're right. It served a purpose. I mean, I used to, you know, pay attention to it. I didn't mean to be a jerk by bringing it up or anything like that.
No, you never want to be a jerk. Well,
I am, right. But I listen.
Not doing it deliberately. It's just who you are.
It's just who I am. But I literally, I will say, this is where I have such great respect for you, too, because you listen to people and you self-scout thyself. That's why we're friends. Because you'll go, well, you know what, Ari, that does need to change. And you do that. So I respect that, like, big time. You progress. That's important.
I'm sorry, are you saying something?
Me?
I wasn't paying attention. Oh. I wasn't listening to you. As you were praising me for listening to people, I'm just trying to be funny. I appreciate that. Now that you've tried to make up for it, you were invited before the program to ensure that our connection worked to give me a giant insult, and you passed, and I said, there's nothing he can say to me that he hasn't already said, so
right.
I appreciate you
That's
saying
right.
something nice for a change, as you have Friday, and the rest of us have Thursday, although I still submit that it feels a little like Friday for me when it's de facto Friday for you.
Good.
Wednesday was a significant day for the National Football League because it was the day that the owners voted on rule changes for 2021. Many failed, but some passed, and the one that passed is the half measure that I hate, Chris, the expanded duties of the replay assistant. Now, on top of everything else the replay assistant already does, the replay assistant will have some involvement in fixing objective rulings that are clearly and obviously wrong by communicating directly with the on-field staff. The league office through Al Riveron already has some responsibility when it comes to administration of rules, and that's part of what this expansion is for the replay assistant. There was some confusion earlier this week about where the lines were between the replay assistant's expanded duties and what Al Riveron already does. I just don't like it because they need to go the rest of the way. I've said this time and again. Let me just say it one more time. Not that I won't say it again after that. There is a gap between what the seven people on the field see and what the millions who are watching at home or wherever else they get their NFL content see. They need an official, a member of the crew who sees what we see and communicates with the officials. And as the Ravens said when they proposed it this year, one of these days we're going to have it. Why not have it now?
Right. I'm with you all the way. Let me get this straight. Like, are they talking like they're going to put more on Al Riveron's plate here with this?
No. The replay assistant who's there at the stadium, who's responsible for activating replay review where it's automatic. It's the person who's already there.
Yes.
Who's like the liaison between Al Riveron and the referee. That person now has extra duties. And I had someone who understands the functions of the officiating department very well tell me a few weeks ago, the replay assistant's already busy enough. And this isn't going to work because of that. And they need to go the rest of the way. But for whatever reason, the NFL's officiating department isn't on board with having that booth umpire, that sky judge, that extra person. I still don't understand why.
I don't get that either.
This is going to save you from the next Rams-Saints debacle. Why wouldn't you want to do whatever you have to do to save yourself from another nightmare scenario? And I think they just assume, Shereen Williams and I were talking about this last night on PFTPM, I think the powers that be, just assume Lightning's not going to strike again in their lifetimes, or at least during the times they're in the position to have to worry about it. We'll let the next crop, or the next one after that, or the next one after that, deal with the next time something like that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. It does seem to be an odd approach. I don't know why you'd want to throw, you know, more work on somebody that's, you know, pretty busy already. Why wouldn't you want an extra pair of eyes to be there to look over everything, who can kind of just, like you said, help everybody out? I really don't. I don't get that. I would think it would make the game smoother just to have one more guy communicate whatever it is. But what is holding them back from just doing that? I don't understand it, Mike. You've been banging the drum for this for ever since the Saints-Rams game. And I didn't, like, love it at first. But the more we've talked about it and discussed it, like, I think you're totally right. I do. And there's always things that need to be cleaned up during football games and whatever else. And that's where I would go. Like, what are the expanded duties? Like, what's the big change about this here? What exactly do they mean by all this? What's the nut and bolts of all this? I guess I'm a little confused by exactly what we're saying here with the rule change.
The language is that the replay official will advise the on-field officials with specific objective aspects of a play when clear and obvious video evidence is present. And that means, did the receiver get 2 feet down?
Yeah.
Was the ball out? Was the receiver inbounds or out of bounds? Specific objective. There won't be the ability. Technically, there won't be the ability for the replay assistant to say, oh, it looks like there was pass interference on that play. It looks like Nickell Robey-Coleman blew up Tommy Lee Lewis. You better throw a flag.
Right.
Technically, they won't have the ability to do that. Now, anyone who's watched this show for more than a little while, and if you have, we appreciate it. I'm a firm believer
that's
going to
happen.
When to break the rules.
Yeah.
No, but do it. Do it. And look, Al Riveron could have done it in that Rams-Saints game. Could have done it. And I'm told, per sources with knowledge of the situation, he specifically decided not to do it because it would have been against the rules.
Right.
But sometimes you got to have the foresight. Sometimes you got to have the understanding, the creativity of imagination to say, you know what? This is going to be a gigantic mess for a lot of people for a long time. I'm going to get on the horn and I'm going to tell the referee, drop a flag. What do you mean drop a flag? Just trust me. Drop a flag. You'll thank me later. Drop a flag. Drop a flag. We never had this conversation.
Yeah.
Drop a flag.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, well, like, in all seriousness, and how many times have we talked about this on Sundays or even a Monday show? I mean, come on. It's been going on ever since that happened. You know, the old, hey.
And before.
Right. Oh, huddle up as the official. Yeah, huddle up the officials, and they sit there and they look at the big screen, and then, you know, one of them has something in their ear, and it's yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, DJ, play that other song again. Right. Yeah, no, not exactly. You're listening to Al Riveron. I mean, come on. So I guess, you know, it's a good thing from this standpoint, just at a base level. It's going to save some teams probably some challenges, right, and things like that during the game, and maybe just speed up the process of the game a little bit to the point where we don't have those stoppages where it's like, what? The receiver got 2 feet in. And how did the official miss that? And then if that's when this replay official comes in and goes, hey, wait, he got him in, you know, change the call in the field, completion. I'm all for that. I really am. Because it would be a pain in the butt, one, you know, to go to now we got to throw the flag, stop the game, go to commercial break and do all of that. And then, of course, you only have so many challenges in your pocket as it is as a coach anyway. So I guess it saves that department, and I like that.
But go the rest of the way.
Yeah,
no half
I'm with
measures.
You there.
One of the great monologues from Mike Ehrmantraut's character, or what the character was Mike Ehrmantraut. Jonathan Banks is the actor who portrayed him in Breaking Bad. The explanation of why you don't engage in half measures. You go the full way. And, Chris, you may not remember this. The week of the Super Bowl following that Rams-Saints debacle heading into Super Bowl 53, we had, was it 53? It was 53.
Yeah, I think
we
so.
We had Rich McKay, the chair of the competition committee, with us on site because the game was being played in Atlanta and they do that victory lap. We got the Super Bowl. We got a new stadium. And it was obvious to me he had no interest in doing anything about the rules in the aftermath of that game. His attitude was, stuff happens.
Yeah, right.
Or a word with one fewer letter happens. And we'll just deal with it when it does. But this is a once in a 100-year event, and we can deal with it. And then when they had the rule change forced down their throats like they did, because the competition committee went to the league meetings that year with no proposal to do anything meaningful to fix what happened in the Rams-Saints game, the owners and the coaches and the executives decided we're going to have replay review for pass interference calls and non-calls.
Yeah.
Then it ends up being a disaster.
Yeah.
To the point where now you are reluctant to do anything significant because you're a little bit gun-shy from what happened with the last one because of all the unintended consequences. And that whole unintended consequences crap, that's just an excuse for having failure of imagination. How hard is it to get into a room and brainstorm all the stuff that could go wrong if we do this? And if you don't have people in the room smart enough to identify all the stuff that could go wrong when you change a rule, people who supposedly know the game inside and out, you need smarter people in the room, because it ain't all that hard to make unintended consequences expected consequences so you don't do the thing that you're going to do. And how hard would it have been, Chris, for someone to realize, you know, there's a chance, given the issues we've had with replay review in the past, all due respect, and what's a catch, what's not a catch, and the standards all over the place.
Yeah, right.
There's a chance we do this. The guy who's responsible, all due respect, is going to be all over the place with that, too. So either we don't do it or we dig deep. We maybe give that guy that left for Fox a phone call and get him to come back and be the one to do it. You know, it isn't all that hard.
No.
It isn't all that hard to figure out what you need to do. And, Chris, that's I made that gesture earlier.
Yeah.
It's money. They don't want to pay. You don't have to pay the replay assistant anymore to say, hey, you know what? You're going to have more duties.
Right.
How many people walk into work on a given day and find out they got more duties and they ain't getting paid any more money for it?
Yeah.
You have 17 sky judges.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pay the money.
17 salaries.
And,
I know.
And they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
17 more members of the union.
I think
17 more of this.
It's shocking.
17 more plane tickets.
Yeah, I know, which is like, you know, I mean, I understand it's expensive, but it's not. I mean, come on. It's a drop in the bucket. It's nothing. It's like it's nothing as compared to what the league is making and keeping the integrity of the game, you know, where it should be, all of that. You know, Mike, I think it's only a matter of time before the sky judge happens. Maybe this is just like the first step to make that happen. And the point you always bring up that at least rings true to me, you know, this is the legalized gambling. I mean, again, that's real. You're right. It's another aspect that I think it'll make gamblers feel better if there's that guy there. This will make them feel better too. My big thing with this just a little bit is like the guy's got a lot on his plate, all of that stuff, like you've already said. But, you know, also within the clear and obvious, I don't know. To me, it's been pretty proven that we don't know what clear and obvious is all the time either. So I guess that's my other issue with this. And I want to see the mechanics of this and exactly how it works. I don't think it's a huge change, but you know, it's a good one at least, and maybe a start down the right road for your sky judge.
You've got 17 replay assistants who very well may be inclined to punt to Al Riveron and let him decide via replay review that there was clear and obvious. And that's where things are going to get a little bit screwy, because the replay review, when it happens, that would happen after the replay assistant chimes in. So let me just give you an example. And I'm trying to articulate this on the fly.
Right.
It may work. It may not. At least I admit it in advance. But let's say there's a close call on a catch. Okay. And on the field, no catch.
Right.
Replay assistant gets involved. Replay assistant decides catch. Well, when Al Riveron activates the replay review, whether there's a
flag,
red flag thrown by a coach or it's in the window where there's an automatic replay review, where you start has a huge influence on where you finish, because are you overturning the ruling that it wasn't a catch and you need clear and obvious evidence to overturn that? Or are you overturning the ruling that it was a catch and you need clear and obvious evidence to overturn that? And how many times, Chris, do we see a call where whatever the ruling on the field was, there isn't going to be clear and obvious evidence to overturn it. Either way, you can't overturn it because it's not clear and obvious that that call was wrong. So that adds another dynamic to it.
Yeah.
Will the replay assistant interject and flip the standard? That's what happens, because the replay assistant in those cases is going to have the power to set the framework for the replay review and make it harder to overturn the ruling on the field.
Yeah,
so that's
right.
A dynamic as well. And let's hope they had people in the room who had the ability to have the conversation we're having right now about that, because that's going to be a very real dynamic.
I mean, do you think this is going to slow the game down? Like, I mean, are we going to have moments here of like, you know, this replay official, okay, I mean, yeah, he's thinks it's clear and obvious, but he's going to sit there and watch replays for a few seconds, and we're going to have the referees huddle like we see them do, like we were joking about before, and they're going to wait and give him a little time now? I mean, is that what they're doing there? I mean, it's the worst thing about replays, of course, that slows the game down, and that was what was so bad a few years ago with the pass interference and everything like that. Games were lasting forever, and it's not a smooth, fun watch that way. So I always worry about the clunkiness of how this is operated, you know, on an NFL Sunday.
I think that the ball gets set for play, the 40-second clock rolls.
And he can do it then.
There's a window of opportunity to communicate with the referee, and they can try to fix it. And if there is something that needs to be fixed, then that's when the game gets slowed down. Now, I think one problem there, one potential complication would be the replay assistant buzzes the referee and tries to tell the referee that maybe there was a mistake, and the referee doesn't agree. And the referee says, you're just the replay assistant, keep your mouth shut.
Right.
And I think that's part of the dynamic as well. How receptive will the on-field officials be to the replay assistant kind of sort of looking over their shoulders? That's why I've said, one of the reasons why I've said it needs to be a full member of the crew. So it's not like we've got the officials here.
And Johnny's overlooking us.
Now all of a sudden the replay assistant's got power over us. The human factors come into play here. And again, when they talk this through, when they devise this, when they discuss it, are they looking at it that way? Or are they just stubborn and short-sighted and narrow-minded and not thinking it through the way that it should be thought through? I don't know, but based on some of the rule changes we've seen in the past, you could argue that they're short-sighted, narrow-minded, not thinking it all through.
No, it seems like some of this stuff is kind of done on the fly at times, or... You know, we just, there isn't enough discussion between really smart minds in the NFL and everything like that. And taking into account all people to get involved in these kind of conversations, I think, when you talk about this stuff. You know, the whole league, coaches, GMs, everything. That, you need all those think tanks there to kind of go through this to flush it out. So, I don't know. We'll see how this goes. It was my least favorite of the rule changes that we had yesterday.
Well, and I think it's the most significant one because it didn't go far enough. And this is a prime example. Every once in a while, I'll get this pushback from folks. Why do you hate the NFL? Why do you criticize the NFL? The league office and the people who are involved on these committees, whichever team they come from, competition committee, this committee, that committee, they're stewards of the game. They are custodians of the power for now, and it's temporary. It's going to be somebody else in the future. And I think it's important for the people who truly give a crap about the game, not just now, but in the future,
and
folks like us who've been following it for years and intend to continue to do so, and we want what's best for it, I think it's important for people to ask tough questions and offer criticism when necessary when the stewards of the game are screwing the game up. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, the people who are the current stewards of the game, we don't want to be criticized. We don't want to be questioned. You're making our lives more difficult. Tough crap. Get it right then. Simple solution. You don't get criticized if you don't screw up.
Yeah, well, you said a lot of right things there. We're not doing it because we hate the league. That's for sure. It's actually the exact opposite. We love the game, and we always want it to be better. It's the exact opposite of that. And, yeah, we don't just, you know, not going to just let them force feed us, you know, new rules, whatever, and just go, oh, okay, great. That was so smart. That's so amazing. No. All right, we'll see where this goes. Sky Judge coming off season 2022.
It's coming. At some point, it's coming. And one last point. It would be great for my digital business. It would be great for this show. It would be great for anyone who covers the league if, for example, there's a huge scandal where a grand jury is convened to find out whether or not someone was on the take when this horrible call happened that there was no mechanism in place to fix, or Congress decides they're going to create a federal agency that has oversight of the NFL. That would be a great, compelling story. I don't want that story. It's not good for the game to have those things happen. What's good for the game is to get the calls right. So, NFL, you get $1 billion over the next 5 years with your new tri-exclusive partnership, which makes no sense. It's exclusive if it's one. They've got three: DraftKings, Caesars, FanDuel. $1 billion for nothing just to make them the official sports books of the NFL. Spend that money to get the calls right. There's your money.
Yeah.
And you don't have to spend the full billion.
Yeah.
But that's where it is. Chris, they're making money for nothing with these deals. And gambling is going to cause cash to fall from the sky. Use that money to get the calls right, or it's going to cost you a hell of a lot more in the long run. That is the primary message.
No, you're right.
I think they all need to take heed of.
100%. I'm with you.
All right. Onside kicks. Here we go. You hate 4th and 15, and there are enough people in the NFL that don't want to do 4th and 15. And just quick background.
Right.
In lieu of the onside kick, which is now almost impossible to recover, there has been a proposal for the past few years to allow the team that's trailing under certain circumstances to attempt a 4th and 15 play. If they convert, they keep possession. There are issues with that. Chris, you've done a good job of articulating in the past. For example, if you have Patrick Mahomes, you got to defend the whole field. You get a touchdown because you're worried about defending the 15-yard line that the team has to get to keep possession.
Right.
So, in an effort to stave that off, they have limited the total number of players on the receiving team that can line up in the setup zone, 10 to 25 yards from the point of the kick, maximum of 9. Typical onside kick, there's 10 or 11 in the setup zone. Now the most you can have is 9 players there, and it's just numbers. It's numbers. If you only have 9 and the kicking team has 11, maybe there's a better chance the kicking team's going to recover the onside kick, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is it's a nice adjustment. There's no doubt about that. I do think it increases the chances a little, but I don't know by how much, right, Mike? I mean, that's going to be the big question. You know, we're talking about, again, I think the biggest thing here, more than anything with the onside kicks, is just the current setup of what we have with guys having to line up, like you see in this picture, right where the ball is being kicked, and not being able to give enough time and everything like that to where now the kicker can't kick those balls that, you know, 2 hops on the ground and hit the big hop in the air, right? That has gone away. So we've had to adjust all that. So, hey, yes, I like this adjustment. I think it's cool to tinker with a little bit. But I don't know, Mike, in my heart of hearts, if I really think it's going to make a huge difference in the approach of how this works. Because to me, the problem here with the unfairness is not about how many players the receiving team has in the box. It's really more about the setup of the kickoff in general. And I understand we're doing things there for player safety, and I'm all for that. But it's just really hard with the mechanics for the kicking team right now to recover that ball with guys starting right even with the football. And it doesn't give them a chance to get to the 10-yard mark and make a play on the ball. So, again, I'm all for this. I like this. I'm not going to, you know, kick back or get mad about this. I'm all for it. But I just think that I don't know if it's going to have much of a change on the game itself.
Yeah, the key change to the entire kickoff play that affected the ability to recover the onside kick, the elimination of the running start.
Yeah.
Now all those players are lined up. They're starting from flat feet, starting
exactly.
With no momentum to get to that 10-yard mark faster. That's the point you're making.
Yeah, and now the kicker can't kick that
before they do.
Right, exactly. The kicker can't kick that ball that we used to see where it was like 2 little skips on the ground, and then all of a sudden it pops up in the air 15 feet in the air,
yeah.
And that's when the kicking team had a chance because now they've had that running start, and okay, yeah, the kicker kicked it perfectly like 14 yards down the field, and we can get there as the ball's coming down and have a 50-50 chance with the receiving team. But this is the only thing we've seen be successful. I mean, this is it right here. And we saw this, what, twice in one game? You know, so it's just so rare at this point. I mean, these are the most well-executed onside kicks. These are what? And this wasn't really, come on, this was just dumb. I don't know what that was, all right, by the Falcons. But either way, I mean, that's, for everybody out there, that's all the onside kicks covered in the last year. That was all of them, right? And that might have been one from even the year before that. Am I right? So yeah. There was three last year total. That was one from the year before. And so, I mean, again, I'm all for it. I don't know, Mike. I don't know if it's really going to matter here. I don't.
Roger Goodell said years ago when he was asked who he roots for, I root for the team that's trailing. The league really wants the team that's trailing by multiple scores to have a chance to get back in the game. And when the onside kick can't be recovered at a sufficiently high rate, you look for other alternatives that will change those numbers. And we'll see over the course of the next year or two whether and to what extent this change will increase the success rate for the recovery of the onside kick. Now, it is a very dangerous play.
Yeah,
there
it
was
is.
A time 20 years or so ago when they were taking away the mulligan that you used to get.
Right.
If you kicked it out of bounds. You used
to get
another chance to do it.
Yeah.
And Bill Cowher, I'm told, was a very staunch proponent. He called it a courage drill. This was something that measured toughness in players because you were literally in car crashes across the board.
Whoa.
Right. And that's one of the reasons they're trying to make the game safer, because you get concussions, you get other injuries that happen during that, but then you don't have an opportunity to recover an onside kick. That's the problem, that's the challenge, and that's the balance the NFL is trying to strike. And I think they'll try this, Chris, and if it doesn't work, that's when we're going to see 4th and 15.
Yeah.
Whether it has flaws or it doesn't, and it does have flaws. Look, I think if they go 4th and 15 onside kick,
right,
they should just go 4th and 15 kickoff, period, and punt. If you're normally going to punt, that's your kickoff.
Yeah.
And then you can run a fake out of there. That's your surprise onside kick, or you can just line your quarterback up under center and go for it, which would be the simulation of the planned onside kick. But I still like that unpredictability of the surprise onside kick.
Yeah.
And if you do a straight 4th and 15 play, and it's only when you're trailing by a certain number of points and everyone knows you're going to go for it, you never have a surprise onside kick if you do that.
No, you don't. You're right. You know, Nicole, can you like bring up that first picture with the alignment, you know, and take your time. I know I'm calling on the fly here, but you know, really, as an ex-football player, a guy who loves the game, everything like that, I wish they could go back to finding a way to where we don't have to have the courage drill, right, anymore, to where we could find a way to go back to let the kicking team have the running start, the kicker could kick the ball the way he used to, and find a way to have rules about, you know, limited contact, something like that. I would rather see it go that way than all these other alternatives. You know, you see the setup zone here and all of this stuff. Okay, so now let's just say one guy is taken out of this, right, like we're talking about. So for the sake of this, I mean, okay, Buffalo right now, this is Buffalo in the AFC Championship game, right? What is Kansas City going to do? From this setup, what, maybe take one guy, maybe at the top of the screen, who's on the 49-yard line or 40, and what, put him behind the yellow line? I mean, we already know which way the ball is being kicked here, right? So that's where I go, I don't know if it really changes anything. And okay, so now you're going to make that guy, let's just say that guy at the top of the screen at the 48-yard line, you're going to move him beyond that yellow line. Is there any rule to where you can move him? Like, if I'm that team now, if I'm Kansas City, that guy at the top of the screen in the 48-yard line, I'm going to move him to the zero on the 40-yard line down here at the bottom, and as soon as the ball gets kicked, I'm going to tell him to run up there and be a part of it. So that's where I don't know if it's really going to have a great change. That was the first thing that jumped out to me when I kind of read the rule. I went, well, these special teams coaches are just going to move these guys back and be out of the zone. But as soon as the ball gets kicked, they're going to go up and make a play. And because of the current state of how this is set up too, like, we see Buffalo's kicking the ball down here. And the way it works now, you can't even do the fake, like, hey, I'm going to kick it this way and now kick it back the other way because you guys have too many guys on one side or you're overloaded in one area. So that's gone too. So I just, that's where I go, I don't know if this is really going to have any effect on the situation. Tell me if you thought that had any logic or brains to it at all.
It makes sense, but I think you're talking about the Chiefs player who is standing right near the zero on the 50
yes.
at the top of the screen.
Right.
48. If you take
that guy
and you move him to the other side of the field so he can run up,
right.
crash into that group that's scrambling for the ball, then you've got a potential imbalance of numbers on the top. So couldn't you then, if you have to take that guy and move him down on the other side of the yellow line, couldn't you then run up to the ball and like kick it with your heel back up, and you have one fewer guy up there?
I know.
That something you could do to counter that?
That's what I was saying. Like, because now we have these guys like starting at the dead stop, right, where the ball is kicked off, and because the way, you know, you have to kick it now, it's hard for the kicker to kind of trick people like he used to in the back day. You know what I'm saying? That's what I was trying to say. Because the way that's set up, back in the old day, they'd go, whoa, there's too many guys over there. I'm going to act like I'm going to kick it over there. And then, like you're saying, right, do the old back kick or side kick, and they kick it the other way, and the numbers match up. And it seems harder to do, and we certainly haven't seen it ever since they set it up this way. And if we have, it's been very limited times, and I don't remember.
There's a reality to this that will entail the special teams coordinators now brainstorming
exactly
ways to try to recover this. And the special teams coordinators have been instrumental in saving the kickoff in its current form. They had the ideas a few years ago that made it a safer play. And, hey, you take away the onside kick, that's just one less thing that the special teams coordinator has influence over, because then it goes back to offense and defense for the 4th and 15 play. So this is the Hail Mary effort by special teams coordinators and the Hail Mary effort by the league to fend off the 4th and 15, because I sense that your concerns about 4th and 15 are shared by others in the league, and they don't want to cross that bridge until they have to.
Yeah.
They have crossed the bridge that I wouldn't have expected that they'd cross.
Whoa!
I thought it was the No Fun League. Single-digit jerseys now available for running backs, receivers, tight ends, defensive backs, and linebackers. That is going to be extremely interesting as it relates to the land rush for the single-digit numbers.
It is. Oh, my God.
Learned a week ago today with Robert Woods on the program.
Yep.
He wore number 2 in college. He wants to wear number 2 now with the Rams. Jalen Ramsey wants number 2 with the Rams.
Yeah.
Maybe they're going to do rock, paper, scissors to figure it out. We'll talk more about rock, paper, scissors later. But
right.
You got to do something to figure out who's going to get those jerseys. And the other wrinkle, Chris, I was reminded of this by the league recently. Now, I asked the question. It's not like they reached out and told me, but it's an issue from years ago. If you want to change your number for the upcoming year, and there's an inventory of unsold jerseys with your current number on them, you got to buy those.
That is such BS.
There was a
BS.
Time when Adrian Peterson was going to change his number, and he got the bill for what it was going to cost to change the number. He said, "Nah, I'll wait." So that could keep some of these guys, the more popular guys, who are more likely to have a stockpile of jerseys in their current numbers. It's going to be harder for them because they're going to be the ones more likely to have to write the check.
Okay, for lack of a better way to say it, that pisses me off. I mean, so when a guy has a jersey that's stockpiled, you know, back in, you know, and they got lots of, and then the team trades them or cuts them, is the NFL going to pay that player and go, well, you know, well, hey, you know, here's the other money that, you know, from the jerseys of your, like, that's BS. That's BS. You change the rules, the rules are changed. You're going to make players pay to change their numbers here if there's still a lot of them back in stockpile? That I don't like. Everything else I'm all for. I think it is going to be really cool. I think at first I misunderstood that I thought there was going to be defense and offensive linemen, or defensive linemen were going to be able to wear the single digits, but I think this is the right way, the way they're doing it. And it's going to be all-out war in the locker room for these numbers. It really is because so many of these players, yes, have been single digits, high school, college. They think it looks cooler. I always thought it looked cooler, single digits. And you're going to have true, like, you know, fights in the locker room here and like competition and who knows what to try to get some of these numbers.
Pete makes a great point too. Defensive linemen, defensive ends are going to want to be classified as linebackers,
right?
So they can wear single digits. You need to think that through though.
Yes.
Because if you ever get franchise tagged, you'd rather be a defensive end than a linebacker, because defensive end pays better under the franchise tag. And we saw that issue with Shaq Barrett and the Buccaneers. They settled that earlier this year. before they applied the franchise tag to him, could have applied it to. One of the reasons they didn't apply it to him a second time, he settled that grievance favorably, and the franchise tag for Barrett would have been over $20 million the second time around. So that's another wrinkle. And Chris, we went through this with J.J. Watt going to Arizona, and I've got on my list of things to do, research all the retired single-digit numbers throughout the league, because could it be that in some of these cities, retired isn't really retired because all of a sudden there's a star player who wants to wear that jersey number that previously he couldn't have worn by rule. Now he can wear it, and now the family of the late insert name of guy who the jersey was retired for says we give our blessing, because what else are they going to say? Because it puts them in a horrible spot.
Yeah.
I don't want to start down that rabbit hole again, but it puts the family in a horrible spot, because what are they going to say? No. Of course they're going to say yes.
Yeah, no, but you know, Mike, you brought up we had Rashad Weaver yesterday, right, from Pitt, the defense end. He said exactly what you said, that he wouldn't mind if they made him an outside linebacker so he could wear that number and do that. So you're right. There's going to be some tinkering there, and maybe some guys that are those kind of hybrid outside linebackers, defensive ends, who are going to go, no, can you please list me as that? And maybe not understand the consequences of that franchise tag and things like that, too. That'll be interesting to watch to see, you know, what guys kind of put themselves out there to try to do that.
And Weaver, by the way, wore 17 at Pitt. He wouldn't be allowed to wear that number as a linebacker. It would have to be 1 or 7 or 8, the combination of 1 plus 7, one of the few math problems that I can still solve. Let's take a break. When we return, there was a report that emerged yesterday about Justin Fields' health. Will it affect his draft stock in any way? We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Just in and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You know, possible good news for Rashad Weaver after all. By the way, before we get to that, there are the three rings that Mac Jones got last year. When you don't pay the players, you got plenty of money left over to buy them jewelry, Chris. You got the SEC championship ring, the Rose Bowl ring, and the college football playoff ring. And they're all pretty nice rings because, again, when you don't pay the players, the jewelry budget line item can be significantly larger. All right, one quick note for Rashad Weaver. Apparently, based upon this tweet that was sent out yesterday by the NFL, he can wear 17. This isn't something that was discussed ahead of time. It was just single digits, but they've unlocked 1 to 59 for linebackers. I'm confirming that's accurate because look at the second line. The way that's written, it implies running backs and fullbacks can now wear numbers 80 to 89. That's another surprise, too. That's another twist that goes beyond what I thought the Chiefs proposed.
Yeah.
So I'm going to find out.
Okay,
I'm going to find out now. I'll mention it at PFT, or if we get an answer before 9 o'clock, we'll update it. I sent the NFL an email asking that question.
Cool.
All right, the draft, a week away. The odds have changed yet again for the third overall pick in the draft. Chris, you moved the market a few weeks ago when you went heavy with Mac Jones as the third overall pick for the San Francisco 49ers. And then what happened? Justin Fields had his pro day two, and it went the other way.
Right.
Well, now Mac Jones, the favorite once again, at minus 140, to be, I think that second column may be off a little bit. No, it's not. There was another step in between where Fields was the favorite. My bad. That's not on that graphic. But now Jones is the favorite again. A week ago, Fields was the favorite in minus territory. Now Mac Jones back in minus territory at 140. Fields at plus 130. And there's Trey Lance, whose odds actually have gotten better since that last one. I think he was plus 425, the one that's not on the graphic. So, I still think they went up there. We talked about this yesterday, knowing who it was going to be. And it's just guesswork for the rest of us to figure it out. And for whatever reason, last week, the guesswork, as it relates to the money people were putting on those wagers, pushed the thing toward Fields being the favorite. Now it's back where I think it should have been all along. Mac Jones should be the favorite, based upon the analysis that you and others attached to that move that was made last month by the 49ers up the number three.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if it's not Mac Jones. I really would be. I mean, that was my original thought from the get-go, you know, and like I've said many times, listen, you know, Kyle Shanahan is really smart. He's really well thought out. He really is. This is not something I think he just dove into or flipped a coin and was like, oh, I'm trading up to number three, everybody. You know, I think this was, like you're saying, a tactical move with having one guy in mind, but also going, wait, I like the whole group here, really. They're all talented guys. Let me look at them, blah, 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 and I'm going to continue to do my homework. But I really like this one guy, and that's why I'm really trading up to get him. So we'll see where that goes. We will. I mean, there's certainly really interesting things about all three of these guys' games. They have some elite traits. But to me, I'll go back to my base thought once again. Only one of those three guys that we put on that graphic is NFL ready right now, ready to play, execute any offense other than the Lamar Jackson offense. And that's Mac Jones. And to me, you don't trade up to get a guy that got a few like, ooh, I think he can fix this. Ooh, I think he'll be able to do this. Ooh, I need to work at him in this area. Ooh, I need to sit him out for a year. That's not who you trade up to number three for, in my opinion. And that's why I would continue to think it's Mac Jones.
And I continue to believe you don't make that pick unless you're damn sure who it's going to be.
Yeah.
You're trading for the guy, not for the slot.
Right.
Justin Fields, the guy who was the favorite as of a week ago to be that third overall pick. A report emerged yesterday from NFL media, and I'm going to pontificate in a second or two, not that anyone cares about NFL media reporting this stuff out, even if teams know about it. Justin Fields has informed teams that he has epilepsy. He hasn't been affected by the condition on the field. Symptoms have been less frequent in recent years. Other members of his family have outgrown the condition in their 20s. Doctors believe that could be the case for Fields as well. I don't know where the line is when it comes to putting this stuff out there for public consumption. The teams already know, though. So it's not like it's going to hurt him
right
on draft day.
That's right.
It could explain. If he slides, it could help explain it. There's just something about it that bugs me when stuff like this gets out. And it's a shame that people's private medical condition becomes subject for public discussion and transaction and speculation. But I guess the argument would be it goes with the territory. When you're going to play a game that your availability on Sunday is a major aspect of your desirability
to
be drafted, then you kind of open that door. And the fact that Fields advise teams of that on his own would make it even more appropriate, I suppose, for it to be leaked and discussed. There's just something about it that doesn't sit right with me, Chris. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, you know, again, it is privacy of a player. It is a medical issue. And really, what I would really say more than anything, too, is it just seems more like propaganda piling on Justin Fields to me, which I don't like. And listen, I know I'm not the biggest fan of Justin Fields the player, and I've been one of those guys to say I don't think he's a top 10 pick. That doesn't mean anything about the person or the guy I've seen. I mean, I hope he proves me wrong. But that's to me where I go, wait, okay, so he let everybody know you have epilepsy. Has he missed a game or we've heard anything over the last 2 years that has affected him in his preparation for Ohio State? Absolutely not. We have not. Okay, so just leave it at that. It just seems like a little bit piling on a guy to me at this point. And I think that's what kind of bothers me. My best friend in college was epileptic. He played on the football team, Roderick Babers, right? He, yeah, had to deal with it. It was a pain in the butt a little, but it never affected his play or anything like that. You know, it came about sometimes when he was stressed out or tired or things like that, but he managed it. He did. You know, we had a few scares every now and then. We'd be sitting there playing Xbox, and, you know, he would have a seizure, and, you know, we'd be all freaked out or whatever else and try to help him and do all that type of stuff, but... You know, I think this sounds like something that's he's got under control, and I don't see it affecting his play or anything like that as we go on here.
Ohio State coach Ryan Day, who came out a couple of weeks ago when issues emerged about Justin Fields' commitment to the game, love of the game, etc., tweeted yesterday, Justin's health, toughness, and work ethic have never been an issue, and I'm incredibly proud of his professionalism and the character he displays on and off the field.
Yeah.
The fact that he never missed a game at Ohio State speaks volumes about how he takes care of himself. The good news this time around, Ryan Day didn't use that opportunity to speak
slander other people.
Who opted out last year. Yeah, yeah. He's found the right balance when it comes to supporting his players. But... Look, I've been doing this 20 years now. It doesn't just fall out of the sky randomly when reporters get this information a week before the draft. Someone who knows it and someone who should be protecting it, even if all 32 teams know it, you know, all 32 teams know the Wunderlich scores, but that doesn't stop someone with an agenda from leaking the bad ones. Or in this case, someone with an agenda leaking that Justin Fields acknowledged that he has epilepsy. That's what bothers me about it, because somebody's up to something in putting this out. And all too often, we in the media, and specifically the NFL, which has its own media conglomerate, is willing to soak that up and spit it all back out to the world.
Right.
Under the guise of doing what the media is supposed to do.
Yeah.
That's what bothers me, because they're trafficking in medical information that should be private. And I know there's a public nature to being an NFL quarterback. And again, all 32 teams know about it. But what bothers me, Chris, is I feel like someone, for whatever reason, wanted this to get out a week before the draft.
I don't disagree. Wanted to get it out, or more to me that it jumps out. I would say from my stance of just going, somebody who's just real thirsty and hungry to get attention by putting something out. Like I have information. I talk to people in the NFL. You know that. I got friends. I know some of these guys, Wunderlich scores and all those things. You know, we just talk about football and it's, oh, hey, did you know? Yeah, well, he tested this way or he did this. And, you know, you're just talking about the guy. And, yeah, I know some of these things about these players behind the scenes, but I'm not sitting here trying to, you know, blurt it out to the public or do anything like that. I think it's one, probably maybe intended, two, also somebody in the media that's just like, we were talking about Justin Fields and, you know, the guy brought up, you know, the area scout or whatever. Hey, you know, he's epileptic too. That's another thing that's to worry about. And, you know, now that reporters, nobody's put that out there and they're thirsty to get that out there and get the attention and everything like that way too. So, it bothers me a little too, Mike. I'm with you. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think it's going to be a game changer as far as his draft stock, him dropping or anything like that, you know, in a week from now.
Yeah, but I think we've hit the nail on the head. Yeah. There's just something about it that just it's a tough call. And I fear that the people who traffic in this from a media standpoint never bother to stop and think, is this what I should be doing?
Right.
Just do it, because there's that constant pressure. Be first. Get information. Have something someone else doesn't have, and you never stop and think whether it's something that you should. And I've been there. I've done it. I've learned. I've grown over the years. Listen, we used to put out the Wunderlich numbers. We don't anymore. And if something like this had fallen into my lap, I'd like to think that I would have said, you know what? I'm not comfortable reporting this. Let someone else do it, but I'm not going to do it. Let's take a break. More PFT Live right after this.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown resolved the civil lawsuit for sexual assault and rape that was filed against him September of 2019. It contributed to his very short stint in New England, and it also contributed to him not playing for anyone else in 2019 because teams weren't sure whether or not he was going to land on the commissioner exempt list. Then last year, when he was suspended 8 games for other misconduct, the NFL took no action regarding this allegation in a civil lawsuit of sexual assault and rape. The case has been settled. The case is over. It never should have been filed, frankly. He should have settled it before it ever got to that point, or it wouldn't have derailed his career in 2019. But now that it's over, Chris, I think it makes it more likely he'll be back this year, because if that case hadn't been settled, at some point he was going to have to testify under oath. And based upon how his testimony under oath went off the rails in that lawsuit regarding him allegedly trashing an apartment in Miami,
right,
it could have gone off the rails. It could have gotten him suspended. If you go to trial and you lose, the NFL could have swooped in. They basically left the door open. And they say the door's still open. The matter's still under review. But now that that case is settled, there's not going to be any new evidence.
Yeah,
there's not
right.
going to be any new developments. I suspect they ultimately won't do anything about this specific allegation against Antonio Brown.
No, I don't think so either. And I think you made the case, too, last year about, you know, how he's kind of served his suspension anyways with, you know, some of the other issues and everything like that. So it's like he's got some games in the bank for his what he served for the NFL, who was probably a hair too harsh on him to begin with, and some of that. So the big question to me is, with Antonio Brown, is it going to be, who is it going to be? That's what I want to know. Who's it going to be? I do think this will open up the door finally for some more teams to feel comfortable about getting involved in the Antonio Brown, you know, attraction and maybe getting him on their football team. I don't know. I get the feeling that the Bucs would like to kind of move on. That's just my feeling. And again, I don't know that. I'm reading between the lines. I just feel like there hasn't been any aggressive talk there out of the Buccaneers organization that way. And I guess in my heart of hearts, I think we're going to see Antonio Brown on a new team. It's just, I wonder what he'll get offered out there on the free agent market.
I know that GM Jason Light downplayed the connection between the lawsuit and the lack of a contract for Antonio Brown. Frankly, I think the connection is stronger than he would acknowledge.
Yeah.
And now that the lawsuit's cleared away, maybe it does open the door for something other than an offer that they know he won't accept. The Seahawks, thanks to Russell Wilson, mm-hmm. continue to be in the mix. I don't think the organization wants Antonio Brown, even if Russell Wilson does. Same thing with Baltimore. Lamar Jackson, Hollywood Brown, last year, stumping publicly for Antonio Brown. Ravens didn't want him. What'd they do? They went out and got Dez Bryant instead as kind of a peace offering when they didn't pursue the guy that Lamar and Hollywood wanted. So I think the Bucs continue to be the favorite, and we'll see what happens. And one last point, Chris, just so we're clear on what my belief was last year. Because the league refused to say whether or not he'd be on the commissioner exempt list in 2019, he served a 14-game unpaid suspension.
Right, right.
So that, to me, should count for something, and that's why I think they should close the door on it. It should be over. He should be free and clear, allowed to come back pending any further misconduct in which he could engage. To his credit, he has stayed out of trouble for months
yep.
now. Based on 2019, I never would have thought that would happen. Here's what's going to happen now. Quick break. More PFT Live right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.